Solitaire Rose Novelcast, After the Fall, Episode 1. Notes before we get into the novel. First, my plan was to do a chapter per episode, but I've found that my writing is much longer when it comes to chapters, and I'd like to stick to between a 25 and 35 minute format, so instead I will have sections of the novel. And when the scene changes, you know, when you read a novel and they have the dots or the lines or whatever to let you know that the scene has changed, I will have an audio cue for that. Here it is. When you hear that audio cue, you've reached the end of a section, and the next section is beginning. Also, as you listen, remember that these will be bi-weekly, every other week, until the novel is complete. Then, when the novel's complete, I will have an Amazon listing for you to be able to buy the novel as an ebook. And there will be an audiobook, which will be the podcast with all of the introductions and the conclusions taken out. Just nothing but the audiobook. After the Fall, Chapter 1. Mark had slept for the past day. Time didn't matter much as he sat in some stranger's reinforced basement and listened to both distant and nearby moaning. The air around him was cold, damp, and smelled like the potatoes that his mother had told him to throw away because they'd gone bad when he was a child. He'd heard a loud bump over him and figured one of the zombies had just run into a table, chair, or even the wall. The first floor of the house had been filled with them and he'd locked himself in. They'd followed him here. There were too many of them to fight off, so he'd found this basement sanctuary to wait them out. The sound made him think they hadn't lost interest yet for some reason. He reached behind his head and grabbed his shotgun, Betsy, named for the last person he'd traveled with. He coughed, hard, could hear the fluid in his lungs rattle a bit. Another cold, or worse. He reached around for the lantern he brought down into the basement with him, and lit it with matches from his pocket. The dim light forcing its way through the dirty glass didn't help much. It wasn't his basement, so there was no shock of revelation telling him, "Oh, right, that's where everything is." It was a basement in a house he'd taken refuge in 4 days ago, and it still felt alien. He'd hoped it was as safe and secure as it needed to be. It was another old farmhouse that had been turned into a safe house. There weren't tools or boxes filled with old books and magazines as there used to be in basements. Instead, there were boxes of food and water. Canned foods, army rations, water in packs that had been bought by people when the first stories about the end of things started being reported. Everyone was shocked that they had enough time to actually have some plans for the end of civilization as we knew it. If there's a dollar to be made, someone's going to make it, and the survivalists cleaned up. There were MREs, meals ready to eat, in boxes. He picked out one and read what the contents would be. Today it was chicken a la king for breakfast. When he first started eating them, they tasted like shit. But now they were like hitting gold. It meant you wouldn't have to waste time opening cans, hoping that the food inside hadn't turned, or trying to find food you could eat while on the run. He used to love freshly killed game. Now it was too much work and slowed him down. Looking around, the place was clean. No bugs or rats, so it was secured. And there were no bodies either, which meant that the people who'd built it either got out or were nailed upstairs. He'd stayed in places where the former owners were still in their secured basements, but something had gone wrong. They were all dead, hidden behind their locked doors. It was usually easy to tell what had gone wrong by how the bodies were. Sometimes it was that one of them had been infected and turned while they were locked inside. Those were the worst, since the bodies were partially devoured, and a starving one of the dead would be slumped in a corner, waiting for the headshot. Other times you could tell that the stress had gotten to them and they'd killed each other in an argument. There were also a few where there was one body with a bullet in its head. Person who couldn't take it anymore and opted out, making sure they wouldn't be back. A few years ago, these would be horrific thoughts. Now they were just memories and information. He grabbed a meal packet, ripped it open, spilling the contents onto the floor. Plastic utensils wrapped in a thicker plastic, 4 dull green packets holding food, matches, a paper napkin, and a wet nap. He heard a loud thump above him. One was pounding on the door, seeing if there was anyone inside. The people who'd said that they weren't intelligent were wrong. Dead wrong now. He ate the food greedily. He actually felt it as it went into his stomach, a sign that he'd been sleeping too long. He hoped it wasn't night. If it was night, he'd have to wait another day and try for daylight again. The dim light from the lantern illuminated the bare cement floor, and he took the spare bedding he'd used and packed it away in one of the boxes, just as he'd found it. That way, if someone else used the house, they'd know where things were. It was the way of things, a form of taking care of people you would never meet. He opened a liter bottle of water from another box and drank the entire thing. He drank half of another and stopped to breathe. After he finished that one, he did some quick exercises, just push-ups, sit-ups, and stretching. Had to stay fit, had to stay ready to run. He'd done a lot of running. The other things were what he did so that he could have an edge. They were slow but strong, and if they got their hands on you, you needed to be strong enough to get away or you were done. No more running, no more hiding, no more fighting. Those things were bad, but they were better than the alternative. He grabbed his backpack and checked the contents, taking from the boxes things he was low on, MREs, water, shotgun shells, ammo for his pistol, toilet paper, fuel for the lantern, and if there were books, he'd grab one or two as well. Normally, if you had to hole up in a place like this, you'd just read and wait, do your time until it was safe to go outside. He didn't want to stay here very long, though. The basement was safe enough, but it was close to a city, and the further away from a city, the better. They tended to gather in cities. Back in the day, he'd heard scientists say it was vestigial memory. They would go where they had gone before they turned. He didn't believe it. He thought it was because they knew the people wanted their cities back and would keep trying to take them back. So they would wait in the cities for people to come back, and they did, for all the good it did them. Another thump, this one louder and coming from the top of the stairs. He didn't say anything. He hadn't said anything out loud for months. No one with him to talk to, and he wasn't crazy enough to talk to people who weren't there. No volleyballs with vases drawn on them or imaginary friends like in movies about isolation. Just survival and thinking. Thinking a lot. That's why he read in safe houses. Gave him new things to think about, forced out the memories he usually spent his time thinking about. He spent a lot of time thinking about science and how it hadn't been any better than religion when the end came. A thump and a moan. It knew he was here. He wondered if he snored at night and the sound had brought it here. He wondered if he'd been too long since he cleaned up and it could smell him. In the end, it didn't matter, but the thoughts were keeping his mind busy as he kept checking around the basement. He double-checked his pack, grabbed another couple of MREs, hoping he got chicken a la king in a few of them. He slung the backpack over his shoulder, picked up the shotgun, loading it quickly with no waste of movement. He checked his pistol's magazine and made sure it was full as well. Not that he trusted using a pistol. They were good at killing living things, but the dead? Just not enough stopping power. He'd trusted Betsy with doing that, but only as a last resort. She was loud and tended to draw visitors from miles around. If you used a gun, you could count on a lot of the rotting sons of bitches showing up to visit, so if you use one, you'd better be out of options and ready to be somewhere else as fast as you can. He shoved Betsy into her special quick-draw slot he'd made in his backpack for her, grabbed his machete. It was heavy, sharp, and silent. The lantern was a small one. He doused the light and put it in his backpack as well. Another invention of the army. He'd long since thanked the military for their inventions. He loved the little thing, small as a deck of playing cards, could burn just about any kind of oil for fuel, including vegetable and olive oil. Back before everything fell apart, he didn't have much use for the military. Now he felt bad for treating the military as if they were lower than dirt when he was younger. Hard to continue to be a man of peace if you want to stay alive now. He walked silently to the stairs and made sure his backpack was secured. He didn't even notice its weight anymore. He went up the steps slowly, his breathing slowing, his heart rate dropping, his mind only thinking about what he could hear and being ready for what was to come. At the top of the stairs there was a hastily made platform. The people who'd lived here had converted a normal basement into a safe one when there was still hope they could keep civilization going. back when there were still commercials and cell phones and grocery stores and shopping. It was thought to be a quick little war, or even an ongoing one that no one would really be affected by. He'd even made fun of a neighbor who'd added a safe basement to his house, saying it was like building a bomb shelter during the Cold War. The neighbor said it would keep him safe. They were both wrong. The shelter was a good idea, but it didn't keep his neighbor, his wife, and his two kids alive. The gas explosion, caused by an errant gunshot, had caused the house to erupt in a fireball. Even after the fire died out, the top of the basement was gone. That was how Mark knew it was time to hit the road and not look back on the nice little suburban neighborhood he'd lived in before. Most of the safe basements in the cities were made by con men who saw a quick buck and quickly realized that their customers probably wouldn't be around after they found out the fixes had been mostly cosmetic. Sadly, the con men got their money and left when there was no more use for money. The people with badly constructed safe houses died cursing that they hadn't paid top dollar. The door was reinforced with steel on his side and had a pair of large metal bars to keep it from being knocked in. There was a panel at head level that would slide up, but it was held in place by a pair of large sliding locks. Another thump on the door. He wasn't startled and didn't jump because he was listening so closely he could hear the fabric of whatever it was wearing rubbing against itself on the other side of the door, reeling back for the blow. It had been a minute, maybe two, since the last blow, and he guessed that it didn't know he was here. It was just frustrated by the locked door. He slowly slid the bolt for the first lock on the panel loose, trying to not make a sound. He didn't know how good their hearing was, but he knew that they could hear and smell. Damn, but they could smell. As he slid the bolt of the second lock out of place, there was another thump. This one startled him, and he pulled his hand back, causing the lock to clink against the panel. He held his breath and got the machete ready, holding it firmly and ready to bring it down in the middle of the thing's skull. It started pounding, relentlessly, stronger each time. Thump, thump, thump. He watched silently as the bolt lock moved a little further right with each thump, moving bit by bit out of position. It was moving, and soon the panel would come open with a single hit from the thing on the other side. He took a deep breath and waited. Thump. 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 The bolt slipped out of position, and the panel moved a tiny bit. Thump. The panel opened completely with that, and was sitting ajar, just enough so he could see the light stream in around the edges. He waited, not breathing, not thinking. Waiting. The panel was shoved inward by a gray, grasping hand, and he calmly raised his arm. The door then burst open, and he brought the machete down, and then threw the thing's head. He closed his eyes and said silently to himself, "Screw you." Black fluid that had one time been blood splattered the floor and door frame. The zombie collapsed to the floor. It didn't move. There were no twitches, no spasms, nothing. It just stopped. It had been dead for quite a long time, but now it would stop moving. He kicked the body back and slammed the door. He looked through the panel again, making sure there were no more. He quickly opened the door, holding the machete in front of him like a talisman to ward off evil. He listened, he looked, and there was nothing. Only one zombie. Only one. He was a bit surprised since it was making enough noise clomping around the house for four or five. He'd been lucky, and now it was time to move, since if any were in the area, they would be coming soon. They must be able to smell him. "Guess I need a bath," he said to no one in particular. Wendy ached all over. Her joints still hurt from the infection, but as she looked over at Tim, she knew he was doing far worse. Her fever had broken a couple of days before, but Tim was still lying on the cot, sweating and having trouble breathing. His breath came in long, raspy, tortured gasps. She had no idea how he could sleep with breathing being such an effort for him. She wanted to sit by his bedside and take care of him, but she couldn't. She was too scared. Even though the same zombie had scratched them both, she'd fought off the infection. Her rational mind told her it wasn't dangerous. The disease, or diseases. They were dead. Lord knows what kind of bugs they had in them, both figuratively and literally. Could only be passed if the skin was broken. The irrational part of her mind kept screaming at her that if she got too close to him, she'd get sick again, and the next time she wouldn't make it. She also knew that if they would have been bitten, they wouldn't have even made it here. She didn't know why. Maybe because the bite had more of whatever disease it was, or maybe because the normal human mouth was filled with an incredible amount of disease, but a bite meant death. A scratch? Well, she was proof you could survive that if you were strong and lucky. Mostly lucky, she thought. He looked so small there on the cot. When she'd met him 3 years before, he was a huge man. He carried a gun bigger than any she'd ever seen that he said he'd liberated from an overrun army base. He'd showed her his house, one that had been equipped with the safe room, and he'd also built a fence high and strong enough to keep them out. Them. It kept them out. After she'd lived there a year, they didn't even try to break through the fence anymore. And they had a near-normal experience, if such a thing was possible. They grew food and left the grounds more often, usually to hunt game, find fruit, see what kind of supplies they could find in nearby houses or the deserted army base. It was pointless to go into the city. They looked at it once in a while through binoculars, and they could still see them walking around aimlessly on the streets. It was like they were waiting for people to come back. He stopped breathing for a second. She held her breath, willing him to keep breathing. All other thoughts were gone as she chanted, "Breathe, damn it," in her mind over and over again for what seemed like an hour, but was really less than 30 seconds. He let the breath out slowly, his chest rattling. She didn't know a damn thing about illness, but she could tell his lungs were filled with fluid. It was like a flu or pneumonia or whatever it was when that happened. His breathing resumed, rougher than before, more labored, not as deep, more often. It was a month ago when they had been out getting fruit, looking for game, when they stumbled onto a group of them. No, she can't even think the word anymore. She'd almost become one of them, and she wouldn't have known it. Please don't let me become one of them. Even if I do die, she would think over and over again like a mantra. She'd gotten scratched. He'd been scratched deeper. She had seen so much blood, she was sure he'd been bitten. But if he had been, he wouldn't have lasted out the week, let alone almost a month. They got away and doused the wounds with bleach and used every kind of antibacterial thing they had, took penicillin by the handful, and hoped it would work. For her, it had. She looked down at the 4 deep gashes on her arm, still scarred and looking like they would never fully heal. Tim hadn't healed. He slowly got worse until he was lying in a cot in their safe basement under the dim light of a pair of lanterns. He lay there, having trouble breathing, sweating through the sheets around him, even though it was cold enough for her to wear a sweater. The basement was full of supplies, boxes and boxes of them piled against the walls. They had both come down here and secured the door after securing the fence when they knew they were getting too sick to take care of themselves. For all she knew, the fence had failed and the house was filled with them. Bastards. Goddamn bastards. Rotting piece of shit bastards. They'd made it this long. Why did it have to be such a pointless thing? Almost as if they'd gotten careless. She stood up and the aching in her joints was worse. She didn't know if it was the after effects of the illness or the fact she was sleeping on a cot, too. She had no idea how long she'd drifted in and out of consciousness while her fever raged. Clocks and calendars really weren't that useful anymore. He'd gotten sick faster, so she was the one who'd secured the upstairs, locking both the inner and outer fences, locking the doors and windows, and then coming down to the basement. She knew she needed to eat. She'd eaten the contents of a can of tomato soup they'd made back last year when she woke up. She threw most of it up in the small gravity toilet in the back of the basement. After that, she'd nibbled on the MREs they had, but wasn't hungry anymore. She started to grab another one and hoped it was peanut butter and crackers when she heard Tim moan. She looked over and he was trying to get up. He was breathing harder now, and each breath sounded like his entire chest was shaking with each intake of air. She ran over to him and sat on the chair next to the cot, putting her hands on him and easing him back down. After she'd done it, she pulled back violently, hoping the content hadn't made her sick. "Please don't let me get sick," she thought, on and on in an endless loop. "Don't get up. You'll wear yourself out," she said, pulling her hands back quickly, feeling ashamed she had. "Not gonna make it," he said between breaths. His eyes opened a slight bit as he finished the statement. She saw that they were bloodshot and dilated, as if he'd been drinking and smoking pot for a month straight. "Yes, you are. You've woken up, and it just hurts like hell. I still feel like someone went after me with a ball-peen hammer," she said, wiping her hands off on a towel that would later be burned for kindling. "Have to get rid of the disease." "No," Tim said quietly. "I'm burning up. Feels like my muscles are stiffening up. When I went to sit up, it was like I was made of plaster. It's rigor mortis." "No, it isn't," she hissed. "You're awake. You're fine. You're going to get better." "Wendy, I don't want to be one of them." She couldn't reply. Her mouth opened and she tried to form words, but all that came from her was a low, sad moan. "Promise me," he said. "I promise," she said quietly. They had made the promise years before. If one died, the other would make sure they didn't come back. They had known each other a year before she'd told him about her husband. It was before the fall, when people thought they could still stop them. He'd gotten bitten as well, and there were still doctors. They didn't have fancy clinics anymore, and you didn't wait in a room with a TV showing the news and stacks of old magazines. It was usually someone's house, and you had to travel out of town to get there. You'd pay them in cans of food, and if you had a lot of cans of food, they would actually come to your house, shoot you up with antibiotics, and tell you that all you could do was wait. She'd waited. Her husband died while she was out of the room, and when she came back, he was standing there. That shell that used to be her husband. She'd missed him so, and had come to terms with the fact that he was going to die, but he told her he wouldn't come back as one of those things. He was mentally strong, and even if he did return to whatever life they seemed to have, he knew he could overcome it and not become a monster. He wouldn't be one that ate people. He would go away or finish himself off. That was his plan. Yet, when she came up to check on him, he was standing there. She looked into the face of the man she had promised to spend her life with, the man she loved more than any other, the man who'd proposed to her at the airport where they'd met, giving her the ring at the very spot where they'd first seen each other 6 months after they'd met. She looked at the man. She could see the brown in his larger-than-normal eyes and the blonde short hair looking as if he'd just woken up and he didn't look any different. Just a little more vacant, as if he wasn't paying attention to anything. Then he started to come toward her. She didn't move for a second, startled by his speed. She was able to get to the door and shut it, but there was no lock on the outside. She jammed a chair under the handle and hoped it would hold long enough as she ran downstairs. When she got downstairs, she heard the door give way and the footsteps coming down the stairs. As she got the shotgun ready, she couldn't help thinking that it was surprising he could move so fast in his condition, since his asthma made it so he had trouble running normally when he was alive. That was the worst part of it, looking at his face as he came toward her, uncomprehending before the shotgun ended his second life. That had been almost 5 years ago. Now she'd have to go through it again. As she looked at Tim on the cot, it was different. She didn't think of all the time they'd spent together or how much they cared about each other, because they hadn't. They were together in order to survive, each working at something to keep them alive. He would take care of the fences and lead when they went out for game or supplies. She ran the garden and helped with other such things. They both relied on each other for sex. It wasn't love. It was comfort and need. It was a trade. They traded sex for their own reasons, and never thought of it as something romantic. The one thing was, they never talked about it. They both knew that if they did, it would turn into something neither one wanted. He would feel like an aggressor, and she would feel like she had to feel something for him. Those things didn't matter anymore. It was survival, after all. After those needs would met, they could move on to other needs. They'd made a trade, and the trade was almost over. She'd listen as his breathing slowed and got shallower. If she didn't know better, she would think that the fever had broken and he was getting better. But the breaths were just as labored, just bringing in less oxygen. He didn't lay down so much as sink back onto the cot in a sleeping position. She reached down to the floor and got out the revolver. Tim hadn't liked automatic pistols. Too hard to repair, not as reliable as an old-fashioned revolver. She remembered all the times they'd gone hunting for the damn bastards and used them for target practice. shooting at them until she could nail a headshot at 20 yards. The gun was heavy and cold in her hands, and she checked to make sure there were bullets in it, quietly and slowly. She kept track of his breathing, listening, as there were now pauses between each breath, longer each time. When she counted 5 seconds between breaths, she aimed the gun at his head. Soon the breaths were 10 seconds apart, then 30, then 60. A few minutes later, her arm was tired and she was shaking it every so often so that it wouldn't grow numb. When the time between breaths got up to her counting 500, she fired. She spent the rest of the day cleaning up. It was ugly work. She figured she could stay in the house for a good month or so without any help as long as the fences upstairs were fine. They were. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for downloading the episode. This is a new idea and a new experience for me. And I appreciate feedback. If you could give me feedback at corey.strode@gmail.com, I'd really appreciate it. Also, if you could join the Solitaire Rose Novelcast page on Facebook, I would also appreciate that. The more likes and fans we get, the more information, the more the word will get out. And one other thing I'd like to ask, if you listen to the episode and you like it, please tell people. Word of mouth is the best advertising there is for any podcast, and especially in the more experimental podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks for the next part.